full event schedule, tickets, show times, and more information online at cstpdx.com. And now we are getting to the top of the hour at 11, is Art Focus. And we have an hour special today. And do we want to go to pledge to our pledgers right now? Just a minute.
The outpouring of support has been just great this morning. We want to keep that momentum going. We want you to be the next person to call 877-500-5266 and contribute to this community effort. It's the top of the 11 o'clock hour, and we have Flashpoints just finishing up. We urge you to support this show and this type of programming.
And please, we've been actually been pretty busy here this morning. So if you had difficulty getting through on the phone, please give it another try right now. We seem to have a clear spot and the phones are free. So pick up the phone. Give a call at 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. Smiling faces are ready to take your call.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Had him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My very special guest this week is Laura Muller. She's the art curator of the Portland Japanese Garden, and she's here to talk about the big new show, Noritaka Tatehana, Refashioning Beauty, which runs October the 5th through December the 1st. Welcome back to KBOO, Laura.
Thank you, Joseph. It's always nice to be here.
This is a very big show because it's a contemporary artist who is also known in the fashion world, and he's coming from Japan, and you have filled up the gallery and the small gallery with his work. And just tell us what the title Refashioning Beauty sounds to me like. He's a fashion designer, but who is he, Tatehana?
It's interesting you say that, but yes, he is known definitely more so in the fashion world than he is in the art world. And part of that is because his first work that really sort of brought him to international fame were he designed some shoes that a lot of people don't know his name, but they probably know his work. Mm-hmm. And that's because Lady Gaga sort of discovered him and brought him to the international stage of his work, and he became sort of the private shoemaker of Lady Gaga. And so she's worn many of his pairs of shoes, which are these tall heelless platform shoes that mm-hmm. she's made grand entrances in. And so that's really what brought him to international acclaim.
What is a heelless shoe? It sounds like it defies physics.
It certainly looks like it does. I think that's part of the appeal of the shoe, is it sort of goes against you know, what you would think, common knowledge of how a shoe should work, because mm-hmm. the way the weighting of the shoe, it makes the body shift in different ways, and it changes the gait as well. But it's literally a heelless shoe, so it looks like a platform shoe, and it looks like where there should be sort of a heel, a stiletto or a high heel, he's removed that. Mm-hmm. And so it literally defies gravity in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So he's taking these based on like traditional courtesan kind of shoes from medieval Japan.
Right. It's interesting because how this all came about is he was an art student and he went to the Tokyo University of Art in the Department of Craft. So he's always been very interested in Japanese craft, and his sort of graduate project, he designed a contemporary take on the traditional Japanese kimono and the shoes that courtesans, high-ranking oiran courtesans, wore in the Edo period. And he did this contemporary take, and that's what caught the eye of Lady Gaga's stylist and brought these shoes to her attention, and where she became kind of fascinated with them and ended up wearing them. Mm-hmm. But they were based on the traditional mode of these elevated platform sandals, the takageta, that the high-ranking courtesans would wear in Edo, Japan.
Mm-hmm. He's from this medieval capital of Japan. So we always think of Kyoto as the old capital, but there are other ones before that. What's
right.
it called?
He actually was born in Tokyo, but then moved in, and he was raised in Kamakura, is the ancient capital, and that is right on the it's not far actually from Tokyo, but it's on the Pacific coast, and it's this beautiful town that's just filled with these renowned temples and shrines. In fact, one of the most famous, the outdoor Great Buddha, which is a large bronze Buddha, is in Kamakura as well. So many people who've traveled to Japan often go to Kamakura. It's one of their sites that they often go to.
Yeah.
Because it's this ancient capital and has this very distinct outdoor bronze Buddha that you can go and visit.
Mm-hmm. But it's near Tokyo. So he had an urban influence as well as this sort of traditional Japanese influence.
Right. Exactly. So he kind of went back and forth in both worlds. But, you know, Kamakura is this place where, you know, he grew up, and he talks about his childhood, that he spent time walking through the gardens and walking through the grounds of these grand old temples and shrines. So he was, on a daily basis, was exposed to Japanese tradition, Japanese art, Japanese history. And so that really informed him as he started to think about ways to create. He was a creative soul and wanted to create things, but he was always very much tied to Japanese tradition and craft.
Mm-hmm. So another craft object that he plays with is the hairpin. Tell us a bit about those.
Well, in addition to these takageta, the traditional shoes of the oiran, they also had these elaborate hairstyles, which they used lacquer, tortoise shell, these hair pins, and there's a very distinctive shape of these pins. And so he plays on this as well. He likes to take the idea of these symbols that have all these representations of sophistication, beauty, cultivation, and he removes them from their historical context, puts them in kind of the contemporary setting, and then sort of plays with them or refashions them and restructures them to appeal to the contemporary, you know, the contemporary society and contemporary audiences as well. And so these hairpins, one of the things that he does, you know, and these hairpins would be used by the high-ranking courtesans to denote their cultivation and their beauty. And so he would take that, these symbols of beauty and cultivation, and then he enlarges them to a point where they're no longer utilitarian. They're simply sculptural.
How big?
They can be, one of the pieces, they'll be as large as like 5 feet high. So extremely large.
Okay.
Yeah, like large sculptural pieces, but using this very distinctive and identifiable shape of these hairpins. And so they, you know, it brings with it all of these layered meanings of beauty, sophistication, cultivation as well.
Mm-hmm. Is he using the traditional kind of hand finished method that they would have used on a tiny hairpin?
He uses all traditional modes of Japanese craft. Craft really came to its zenith in Japan in the Edo period, and it became known as takumi, which is sort of like the excellence in craft. And so he studied that, and he really believes part of his role is to help continue these long traditions of craft making. So he will find and employs traditional Japanese craftsmen who have used their life to acquire the skill needed for execution of the craft, and he has them assist in actually creating the objects after he's designed them. He'll actually, you know, employ people to work on his art to utilize only the highest levels of craft. Mm-hmm. And one of those things in terms of the hairpins are lacquer artists to create these, you know, really highly executed lacquer finishes that give the objects this amazing sheen and depth and color.
Mm-hmm. So when I think about Japanese craft, I think about the long training process, the apprenticeship. I think we've talked about this before. You know, to make sushi, they stick you on rice for like a year. Or bonsai, you just sweep up for like 18 months. You don't even touch anything.
Right.
So what's his attitude to that? Is he like, I'm not going to learn lacquering because to do it well, it would take me 10 years, but I'm just going to employ craftsmen.
Well, and that's it. I mean, he realizes that it's not something, even as a skilled artist that he is, he'll never be able to acquire the level of skill to produce at the level that he should be at if he's going to produce it himself. And so that's why, you know, he reaches out, he finds these craftsmen who, of course, it's kind of a dying breed, right? I mean, they're dying. There's not many craftsmen alive because it does, you know, it takes years and years. Most of the craft, you know, it's where they come from family, either adopted or born into families. And so there's lines and generations after generations, and they grow up with those in that world. So they grow up learning the craft, and it takes after years and years and years of study and practice is how they acquire these skills. And so obviously as a contemporary artist, he's never going to have the ability and the time to go back and to learn the craft. So finding and utilizing these craftsmen that are still alive and working and have spent their life learning the craft, you know, he feels it's his role to help maintain those crafts and hopefully, you know, keep them for future generations as well.
You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. If you call now on 877-500-5266, you can be entered into a drawing to win 2 tickets for a day at the Japanese Garden. And now, here's a bit more from our pledge team.
Actually, two tickets for a day at the Japanese Garden sounds wonderful, and you can get entered into that drawing at 877-500-5266. My name is Ray. I'm here with my friend Jenka at Membership Drive at Pledge Central, where the theme is the mic to the people. And, you know, one of the things that we have been discussing amongst ourselves here is that the Membership Drive is running more than a little bit behind this time, and part of it may be a public perception of turmoil or discord here at KBOO, and maybe causing some people to reconsider whether they want to renew their membership or withholding a new membership. And, you know, as we talked about it, we agreed, Jenk and I agreed that, you know, democracy is a bit messy. And right now, you know, it's a little bit messy here at KBOO, but at the end of the day, this is a democracy. We are constantly striving to get better. We're not perfect, but we'll continue to strive to get better. And probably now, more than ever, it's more important that you become a member, support your station, not just with your money, not just with your donations, but with your active involvement. So we're asking you to pick up the phone, become a member, call 877-500-5266, or renew your membership, or go online to become a member or renew your membership at kboo.fm. But please, get involved, become an active member of your community radio station. We can't have too much activity. We can't have too many members, and we encourage your voice in your community radio station.
And we can't do it without you, in fact. I mean, this is the crucial time to get involved in KBOO. This is the time when we need you the most. You hear Ray and myself, Jenka, and hopefully we are voices that you recognize from the airwaves through the years, and that you understand the importance of protecting and preserving this little sliver of the airwaves where we have free speech, where we have democracy. And yes, democracy is messy. And yes, there are debates that happen in our board meetings and in our internal workings here at KBOO, and that is how democracy works. And we actually really appreciate that. We appreciate that we have a democracy, that we have airwaves and space for voices to get out there that are shut out of other media. And I hope that you appreciate it as well. Do you appreciate it enough to do a $25 a month contribution? Get yourself a KBOO hoodie. We have had people calling and getting that, and we want you to be next. $25 a month contribution, KBOO hoodie can be yours as your thank you gift. 877-500-5266. We want to thank Mark, a new member from Southeast. So represent Southeast. How about Northeast, North Portland? How about Northwest, Hillsboro, Beaverton? We want to hear from you. 877-500-5266. 800-500-5266.
And we urge you to get involved in your messy democracy here at KBOO. Pick up the phone, give us a call, 877-500-5266. We want to hear you. We need your dollars and support. We need your active involvement with the station. This is your chance to show that you're committed to community media, to community radio here in Portland. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm, and we thank you.
Welcome back to Art Focus, where I'm talking to Laura Muller, art curator of the Portland Japanese Garden, about Noritaka Tatehana Refashioning Beauty, which is October 5th to December the 1st. Laura, tell us a bit more about these shoes that everyone, they kind of capture the imagination of Americans. And of course, with Lady Gaga, you've got a massive audience of new people who might suddenly be interested in Japanese craft.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons why, you know, it was a really wonderful fit to bring him to the garden. And one of the things that we were hoping to do with this project is to open open the garden and what we're going to be doing to new audiences, audiences that wouldn't maybe typically think of coming to the Japanese garden. And by bringing in these contemporary artists and contemporary style makers, if you will, that's going to help bring in new people and have them exposed to the culture and craft of Japan, which is something that is obviously in the mission statement of the Portland Japanese Garden. And these shoes are a perfect example of that. He, you know, here's an artist who has went to university, he's been studying Japanese craft, and now he's taking traditional Japanese modes of these takagata, the high shoes, and he's refashioning them to contemporary audiences to appeal to contemporary taste. But yet he's maintaining using the highest level of craftsmanship, using wood, using leather, and he's embossing them and using colors and patterns that appeal to a contemporary sensibility.
They're sparkly.
He uses a lot of sort of exactly kind of jewel tones, and he uses crystal beads that give them this sort of diamond-like glitter and shininess.
Mm-hmm. Is every pair he makes wearable by somebody?
They are wearable.
They're not
exactly.
Just objects.
They are not objects. I mean, the thing is that they've become almost so rarefied and so beautiful that they do become sculptural objects of art. They're not just shoes, but they can be worn. Like Lady Gaga
to a red carpet event.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does anyone make knockoffs of them in Japan? Can you get them in Converse or Skechers?
No, not like what he does, because there's, you know, getting that balance just right. It really does take, and I don't know of anything like that. I mean, they have obviously platform shoes that are that they produce and that people wear, in very high platform shoes, but mm-hmm. not like this with the heelless platform
shoes. No one's
shoes.
Knocked this off yet.
Not yet. I'm sure this probably coming, or there probably have been, but they haven't been on the market.
Mm-hmm. So how many pairs is he bringing?
We're going to be exhibiting probably about 15 pairs of shoes. In varying colors, in varying media, in varying heights. You know, they range anywhere from like 10 inches up to even almost 20 inches high, and in all different shapes and finishes, but all using this, you know, handcrafted natural materials.
Mm-hmm. Does he do like other sizes? Is it just Lady Gaga's size? Eight.
Well, anyone, if they want to have a custom pair made that they can wear, you can do that. It takes a lot of money and a lot of time.
Oh, really?
He requires you to, if you can get on his schedule, which is not easy, can take up to 2 years to be able to find a time where you can. But he requires anyone who wants to have a custom pair made to wear, to come to Japan, spend at least a week in Japan, learning about the culture, learning
really?
About the history.
Learning
right?
What? The shoe culture or the Japanese culture?
Just Japanese culture more in general, this idea of the aesthetic sensibilities of the Japanese culture, traditionally speaking. And because he really wants it, it's not about just a luxury good. It's about the experience, having this life experience and how that will change, you know, like buying and acquiring a pair of these shoes is going to change your life. And so he takes that very seriously, in this idea of of not only giving you this beautiful luxury item to wear, but also to have this life-changing experience as well.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to honor the history to wear them.
Exactly. I mean, it really is this idea of taking time to learn about where these pieces came from. Mm-hmm. It's not just about buying them and saying, oh, these are really beautiful shoes. It's about learning the history, learning the culture, learning the aesthetic sensibilities to really fully appreciate them.
Mm-hmm. That sounds an incredible work. You know, that's more than the work of the shoe. It's like trying to persuade people to take an interest in something difficult and, you know, that requires study. That's kind of work in itself, right?
It is. I mean, you know, Tatehana is really wonderful because he talks about how he wants to work to preserve Japanese tradition. He sees the value in craft. He sees the value of the life of a craftsman. And he likes to think of himself more of as a craftsman versus a fine artist. Just for this fact of that it's a whole lifestyle. It's like you use your life to learning a craft, of mastering a craft. And so it's a lifestyle. It goes on beyond just creating a beautiful object, but it's what goes into creating that beautiful object that he feels is so important to really get across to people who collect and appreciate his work.
Mm-hmm. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. If you call now on 877-500-5266, you can be entered into a drawing to win 2 tickets to the Japanese Garden. And it's the kind of place where you could stay all day, because now that they have the cultural crossing, there's things happening all the time. Beautiful new buildings by Kuma, and there's a new gift shop. Now you've got 2 gift shops, right? It's a beautiful place to hang out, and it's sort of, for me, it symbolizes the very best of Portland as a cultural center, as a tourist attraction, as a thing we're proud of locally, and as a place to look at art, because there's always something going on in the pavilion. So if you call now 877-500-5266, you might be a winner.
Thanks, Joseph. You know, I love the Japanese Garden. This is Jenka. I'm here with Ray, and we are hearing the phones ring back here in our fall membership drive, and we want you to be the next person to call to support KBOO Community Radio, and maybe you could get tickets to the Japanese Garden, a really wonderful gem in the Portland area. Just like KBOO, a treasure on the airwaves. And please don't underestimate the value of this treasure that we have. This radio station is a place where actual humans from your neighborhood sit down in discussion with other humans from your neighborhood, or local city or state officials, or representatives of different community groups, and talk in an open, genuine, honest way, without deceptive advertising, without marketing, without top-down editorial control. This is unique on the airwaves. Don't take it for granted. Give a call right now. I would urge you to consider that $25 a month contribution. I know it seems like a lot when you say it, but when you think about the value of KBOO, when you think about the value of democracy on the airwaves and the fact that we have it right here in Portland and it needs to be preserved, then consider $25 a month for your community radio station. Get yourself that warm, cozy KBOO hoodie, curl up in it, read a good book that you learned about on KBOO, and support your community radio station that way. 877-500-5266.
Or you can wear that KBOO hoodie to your next trek up to the Japanese Garden, which truly is one of the jewels of Portland. For those who haven't been there, you should consider becoming a member just to get entered into that drawing. And if you haven't been there, you should go. And you should wear your KBOO hoodie. So call 877-500-5266. We're suggesting $25 a month. That will get you the hoodie. You'll become a walking, visible supporter of your community radio station, where your voice matters, where your input matters, and where we're committed to your ongoing information, education, music, culture, and arts. 877-500-5266 is the number, or online, it's kboo.fm. Whichever way you choose to do it, please choose to do it now. And if you're renewing, consider adding just $2 a month to your monthly pledge. You'll hardly notice it, and it will mean so much to us. 877-500-5266.
You know, KBOO is the place that's been on the front lines of struggle, beginning in the civil rights movement in the 60s, all the way through until today. You heard us out at the climate strike on last Friday. You heard us at the protests of the World Trade Organization back in 1999, the Occupy Portland, Occupy ICE encampments. KBOO is there. So support the frontline activists that are pushing every day for a better future. These are the voices of resistance. These are the voices of earnest social change, and this is the station that gives those voices a home. So call right now, show your support, whatever amount works for you, whether it's a one-time contribution or a monthly contribution, set the amount, do it now, 877-500-5266.
Welcome back to Art Focus. I'm talking with Laura Muller from the Portland Japanese Garden about Noritaka Tatehana, refashioning beauty. So Tatehana, he's steeped in craft, but he's also a contemporary artist. He likes gallery shows. He has a wonderful gallery in Tokyo. What else is he bringing to Portland?
Well, in addition to the selection of the heelless shoes, he's also bringing in something that you'd consider as a fine artist, as two-dimensional paintings as well. He'll be bringing a selection of paintings. And he also goes back to Japanese tradition as a source for the themes and ideas in his two-dimensional painting work as well. One work he'll be bringing is, they're called embossed paintings. And so he likes to put, there's texture, everything's kind of embossed. He loves the idea of sort of the decorative patterning. And this kind of goes back to his study of textile design and this idea of design of textile different patterns and motifs, and using those in his painting services as well, giving them texture and depth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the paintings that he'll be displaying is actually using like a silver leaf to cover the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And because it has texture and this motif going as well, it almost looks like a fractured mirror surface. So it glimmers and shines, but yet it doesn't give you a mirror surface. It just gives you this wonderful display of light hitting the surface of the painting. And then other paintings that he's bringing, he uses very vivid, lively color, red, blues, but he does them in the shapes of the actual canvases that he's painting on are cloud shape. And the cloud motif has a long history in Japanese tradition. And this is something that he goes back to, this cloud motif. And it goes back to the scenes of Rakuchu, Rakugaizu, which are these elaborate scenes from a bird's eye view of, say, the ancient capital of Kyoto. And clouds are used as a pictorial device to separate scenes and to denote differences in time. So it allows the artist to go back both forward and backward in time. They're used in hand scrolls as well. And again, it's to divide and to represent passages of time forward or backward.
In a hand scroll, you'd be reading and there'd be like a cloud breaking up the text?
No, well, hand scroll and emaki, so like an illustrated hand scroll. So they'll actually, you know, there'll be text portions. Traditional Japanese hand scrolls have text portions, and then often will have illustrated portions as well, where they'll be illustrating the story or what's going on in the text. And so in those, because obviously it's a story and there's a passage of time, they need something to denote the change in time as you're looking through a hand scroll. And so they would use these cloud motifs would be used to denote passage of time and a change in time, a scene, this type, you know, mm-hmm. this type of thing.
So these paintings are like in your face, bright, you know, not traditionally shaped. They're like cutouts.
They're cutouts that appear on the wall, right? So they give you this wonderful depth, but and it's this wonderful depth too. They're two-dimensional, but yet they appear almost three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have these cloud-shaped paintings and they're hung on the wall, it almost looks like you're looking at the sky. If it's on a plain white wall and then you've got these vivid colors on the painting and the cloud shapes, you start to get this wonderful sense of depth.
Do you know if he does the painting by hand or does he outsource that to a traditional
those
painter?
He does those by hand. But he's using very traditional motifs. As you'll notice in the cloud paintings, he has a very standard pattern that he uses in the clouds as he's applying to give kind of a stenciled look with the color to, again, add another layer of depth, visual depth to the works as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he wants to be a painter ultimately?
He wants to be an artist. He wants to be defined as an artist. I think, you know, something that happens when what's happened in his career specifically is, you know, he shot on to the international stage as a designer of shoes. So he's celebrated in the fashion world, but he wants to, you know, he doesn't want to be thought of simply as a shoe designer. And so he's really working to show all the different creative work that he does and how diverse it is, mm-hmm. and the breadth of his creative force.
And he's young, right?
He is young. 34? He's in his 30s, exactly.
Right, so he's kind of got everything ahead of him in a sense, and he has to choose something, maybe.
Well, since he is so young, he doesn't want to be confined already just as a shoe designer. Mm-hmm. So he really wants to showcase and show people how he's not just a shoe designer. He goes beyond that. And so this show is really going to do a lot in that. You know, this is his first show in North America, his first solo show. So it's really going to be used as sort of a springboard for him to really kind of redefine who he is in the art scene in not only in America, in North America, but in the world as well. You know, he's made his name in the shoes. His shoes are in the collections at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. His shoes are in the collection of the FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology, in the museum in New York. He's in the also in London. So his shoes are out there. His name has been made in shoes, but he really wants to go beyond that. And because he's so young and he sees his whole life ahead of him, he really wants to branch out and work in other areas as well.
You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. Let's take a break and listen to our pitches.
Thanks, Joseph. You know, we are live in the KBOO Membership Drive. This is one of the few times a year when we come to you, the listener, and ask for your support for this community radio station. Your number to call is 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Support Art Focus right now. Support the public affairs block on KBOO that goes until noon, and we are trying to reach the goal by noon, and I know that we can do it with your support. You can be the one to put us over the top with your $100 contribution, or maybe you can make that $25 a month commitment. That is a $300 a year, but $25 a month supporting local voices with your membership to KBOO, giving the mic to the people to hear what is most relevant right here in Portland right now. 877-500-5266.
And Jenga, think about the show that Joseph Gallivan does every month. He finds the local artists, he finds the local painters and sculptors, and he brings them to the air, just like D. May Roberts does with Stage and Studio. Keeps local culture alive and available. You're not going to hear this on commercial radio. Nobody's going to spend that much time interviewing the art director from the Japanese Garden on commercial radio. You'll only hear that here on KBOO. So please take this time, show us some support for these folks who give so much of their time and energy to make sure that you're informed and culturally up to date. Call 877-500-5266. $25 a month will get you that KBOO hoodie. When you're out and about visiting the museums or the gardens, you can demonstrate your support for your community radio station and show that you're involved in public affairs, culture, art, and music. 877-500-5266 is the number, or online at kboo.fm, or use your smartphone app and go to donate. But however you choose to do it, now's the time. Become a member. Become part of the KBOO community.
It's so important to support KBOO. Talent, as you know, is universal, while opportunity is not. KBOO provides an opportunity for independent artists, for people who are in the theater scene in Portland, for people who are creating amazing things in our community, to have a space to share that work. And that's done through this community effort. So right now we're asking for your support at the $25 a month level. If that is not doable for you, $5 a month works great as well. A one-time contribution of $20, whatever you can come up with. But you don't have to put any money down right now. You just have to call up and say, okay, I will give you $5 a month out of my checking account. I can do that. I can handle that. For community radio, yes, absolutely. I will step up and I will make that pledge. 877-500-5266. Promote this cross-pollination between these social movements, cultural movements, providing a space for activists and artists and leaders to share their work. Call now, 877-500-5266. And now back to Joseph.
Welcome back to Art Focus. I'm talking to Laura Muller, art curator of the Portland Japanese Garden, about Noritake Tatehana, Refashioning Beauty, on from October the 5th to December the 1st. We were talking about his two-dimensional work. The most stunning piece in this, I think, is 54 red lacquered pieces. They look like tiles, you know, they're on the floor and then they go up the wall, and you install a wall specially so they can go up the wall. Mm-hmm. Now, this is all based on something called the way of incense, or the culture of scent, as in smells. Mm-hmm. Just explain the background to this amazing work.
Yeah, this is a really sort of centerpiece of the exhibition. As you mentioned, he requested that if we're going to show this piece, which we wanted to do because it's such a stunning piece, we had to actually build a temporary wall in our exhibition space. So we are constructing a temporary wall just to install this work. The work are these large red plaques of lacquer, and the motifs are really interesting. They're called Genjiko, and Genjiko has a lot of, there's a lot of different connotations and meanings, very poetic. Like many things in Japanese sort of art and culture, is that there's layered meanings, and Genjiko is one of those. Genji, the tale of Genji, which is, Genji Monogatari, which is the 11th century novel done by the courtwoman, Murasaki Shikibu, and considered kind of by many as the world's first novel. Mm-hmm. And it's about the exploits of Prince Genji,
on Kindle?
I don't know. I'm sure you can. It's been translated many times. I'm sure you can.
Do school kids have to read this, or students?
Oh, definitely parts of it. It's long. It's 54 chapters.
Yeah.
And so it's a lengthy book, but it's well worth the read, because there's all sorts of, it has the exploits of his life, and there's all sorts of like these sort of intermissions of elements of poetry as well, which give it all this really wonderful layered meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And Genjiko is, in the way of incense, is there was a, it became, incense was brought to Japan, and it became a way for the sort of the cultivated people to express themselves, and it was something that they would study so that they could identify. It was the incense guessing game, which it all kind of stemmed from. And so there are these 54 symbols in the chapters represent different scents, individualized scents.
Mm-hmm.
And
but each one has a kind of logo, is that right?
Each one has a logo, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, they're so good at logos, the Japanese, but 54 different ones.
This was hundreds of years ago that they developed this. It's a set of five lines, and how those five lines are intersected will denote an individual scent. And so the part of the game was you would have that the participants would smell an incense, and then they would use these five lines to connect them in certain ways that would denote a specific scent. That's how they would give their answer, and they could check the answer if they were right or not, as they would look at how they combined these five lines, which then created this sort of logo for each scent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's using these individual logos in this piece to represent kind of in a poetic way this idea of cultivation, sophistication, and the knowledge of the scent, the importance of scent, and the role that the scent played. You know, this long history of incense was used both in religious ceremonies and the Buddhist sense as well. It was, you know, the smoke of the incense would rise up, and that was the way for us on the earthy realm to converse or communicate with the afterlife, with Buddha, in the Buddhist sense. And so, and the, just the scent itself would put you into a different world and a different place.
In Japan, is it like in Thailand where they'll burn like 100 sticks of incense at once in a temple?
Exactly. It's also a sign of to purify yourself as well. It purifies as well. The scent would be used exactly like that. Mm-hmm.
And scent in this sense is not like high fashion, you know, a new fragrance from Beyonce. This is religious connotation.
Well, there's both. I mean, that's the thing. That's the beauty of it, is it has the very spiritual religious connotation to it, but it also has a secular importance as well, sort of, you know, a cultural importance as well. Like in the Tale of Genji, there's chapters where they talk about he had many lovers, and he would recognize a lover by her scent. So they had certain characters in the story were known and actually named for different scents. Hmm. And that he talks about his longing for certain lovers, and that he would smell, if he smelt that scent, of course it would bring back memories of these different lovers that he had had in his past.
This is written by a woman?
It was written by a woman, right, in the 11th century in Japan. And it's really a masterwork. And so it has all these different layers. And so he's playing on this history and this layered meaning. And again, though, putting it in terms of when you look at these different pieces in this installation, you see like modern art. There's like this minimalist modern art, like something like Donald Judd would do. They're really fascinating. And then because he's using traditional lacquer in creating them too, it has all these layers of tradition and craft as well. Mm-hmm. But really these rich, beautiful red plaques are laid out on the floor and up the wall, mm-hmm. to really create this amazing space.
So each one is like about a foot square. Is that about right? Maybe a bit more?
About a foot and a half.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So as an experience, you're going to wander around and notice each one is slightly different. You know, the lines are intersecting differently. It's all right angles, though.
It's all right angles, exactly. Yeah. And the way we're going to create the wall, it's going to be quite dramatic. You'll enter the pavilion gallery, and there'll be the wall. So and we'll have, you know, there'll be shoes, there'll be paintings, different works displayed. And you'll be going through the gallery space. You turn the corner around the wall, and bam, you're going to have, you'll create this whole new space, this whole new world, this whole new experience from this one, this singular work of art. Mm-hmm. So there's this really, I think it's going to help create this really wonderful experience in the exhibition itself. Not only are you going to be able to experience these beautiful works of art, these objects of absolute exquisite beauty, but you're going to experience different feelings in each room, in each kind of, you know, each area that you experience the art. It's going to be something new and different. Mm-hmm. So we really wanted to create this idea that the exhibition as a whole is going to provide different experiences as well as you look at the art.
Are these tiles going to smell of anything?
They are not scented. No, they are not scented. But in the mind, they will be, right? I mean, because if you, the more you learn about the history of the Tale of Genji and the meanings of each of these scents, you know, that was part of it too. Like if you read a piece of poetry and they referenced a certain scent, it would bring that back into your mind and you would smell that smell, mm-hmm. even though the scent really wasn't there. And so I think in some ways he it'd be interesting to see. Perhaps a scent will come from the gallery space. Who knows?
Well, I would think as a work of art, you're going to get a lot more out of it if you either read the novel or the Cliff's Notes version and maybe smell some of these smells. I mean, you need to bring some knowledge to it. Otherwise, you're just going to look at a bunch of red squares.
Well, you know,
so how are you going to prime people to get the most out of it?
Well, it's going to be kind of a self-initiative, that's for sure. But, you know, we've got incense that we sell in the gift shop from Japan, of course. And there's a long history of incense. There's shops that just sell incense in Japan. It's a very important thing, the culture of scents. And so, But again, too, like the more you know and the more you bring to a work of art, is the more you're going to get out of it. But the thing is, even if you don't have a background, the pieces, this beautiful, vivid red lacquer plaques, I mean, it creates the space, a visual sort of, you know, this visual impression that even if you don't have the background, it's going to really impress on you, this just the visual aspect of it. And then the more you bring to it, the more you take from it, it'll be the more that you can take and experience the work.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest is Laura Muller from the Portland Japanese Garden, talking about Noritaka Tatehana's show. And if you call 877-500-5266, you can be entered into a drawing to win two tickets to the Japanese Garden. They're normally $18.95 each. And now let's hear from some of our pitchers.
Thanks, Joseph. And we are live in the studio here at KBOO Community Radio on this September day, asking for your support for our fall membership drive. We are going until Saturday, and we have a ways to go, and we need you to step up and support KBOO. Support this messy democracy in action right here on the KBOO airwaves, 877-500-5266. Maybe you're wondering, what is this you're listening to? Why does this sound different from other radio stations? Well, when radio got taken over by advertising, people in Portland decided to do it themselves, and in 1968 created a space on the airwaves that was free from advertisers, independent from corporate or mainstream media interests. That was the birth of KBOO Community Radio. So 51 years later, this station is still going strong, and we bring in cultural leaders, we bring in local activists, we bring in people from whatever walks of life are around here in Portland to talk on the airwaves. This is a experiment in community radio, and it is going strong only because we have support from listeners like yourself. So 80% of our funding is from people giving $5 a month, $10 a month, $25 a month. That is our major source of funding, and that's what keeps this station independent. I really love the fact that we don't have a single donor that is one major donor that says, yes, put this on the air. No, don't put that on the air. No, we're able to be independent because we have 5,000 of you contributing every single month. If you're able to do that, please do it right now. $25 a month might seem like a big ask. Get yourself the KBOO hoodie as a thank you gift. Wear that around proudly, but I don't think it's too much to ask. I really don't think it's too much when you think about the value of KBOO and what it brings to your community and to you as a listener. As you listen and learn from KBOO and you support this radio station, then share it with your community. 877-500-5266.
And I hope you all heard that Jenka made an important point. This is a community station that is brought to you by the members, by the volunteers. There's no programming director. There's no secret playlist that everybody has to adhere to. The music, the content, the public affairs, the culture, this is all originated here at the station. 80% of our programming is original programming here at the station. 877-500-5266 is the way for you to show your support. Call now, become a member. Or if you're renewing, consider renewing at $2 a month more than whatever you're paying now. $2 a month is hardly noticeable to you, but it means so much here at the station. These are independent voices coming to you, programmers every hour putting their heart and soul into it to make sure that you are informed. You want to have that. You want that fresh information, that unbiased information, that uncommercial information in your ear. Call 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. But take this opportunity now to show your support for your community radio station.
Welcome back to Art Focus. I'm here with Laura Muller from the Japanese Garden, talking about Noritaka Tatehana. As an artist, he has several different modes: paintings, sculptures, and his sculptures are very diverse too. So tell us about a couple of other objects that we're going to see in the show.
Well, in addition to all the beautiful shoes that he's bringing in, the beautiful paintings, and this amazing installation, two of my favorite pieces in the show we haven't talked about yet, we haven't gotten to yet. One is called Camellia Fields, and they are bronze bronze camellia flowers painted in acrylic paints and laid out. And this goes back to Tatihana's childhood in Kamakura, the ancient capital of Kamakura, where he recalls as a child his school was next to Koko-onji Temple in Kamakura, and he went to the grounds and there were all these camellia trees. And the camellia is really interesting because when you think about flowering trees or flowers, when they start to die or they start to wither, the petals will start to fall off. Camellias are very interesting that the petals actually don't fall off. The full buds will fall
the
to
whole
the ground.
Bloom?
The whole
okay.
bloom will fall down.
And that's not just when it rains heavily. That's the natural
exactly
falling off. Okay.
If you go when you go to the garden and you see the camellia trees, this is you look down at the ground, you'll see the full blossoms on the on the.
So he grew up with this traditional. It's an aid for meditation, right? To watch these flowers fall.
Well, they ended up becoming these poetic symbols. They were championed and they were used for the samurai culture. Really believed because they felt like it kind of represented their beliefs in terms of the full head would fall. So it was sort of like the strength of the flower. It wasn't just you oftentimes associate this idea of the fleeting world, a fleeting life of the cherry blossoms that and the blossoms as they scatter in the wind. But the camellias, the entire bloom would fall to the ground. So it would be very masculine. The red color represented, of course, blood and the death of the samurai as well. But so it was prized in poetic ways for with the samurai culture as well. So it has this long history in Japanese poems, poetry, literature as well, the red color. And so this really made an impression on Tatehana. And when thinking about life and death, this is a flower that came to his mind. And so this is kind of this piece of sculpture using the camellia blossoms in bronze, painted bronze, is kind of a meditation on life and death, sort of the shortness and the brevity of life and the beauty of life, and then it ending. And so looking at that piece, and it's just this really beautiful piece.
This is a big big flower.
Well, it's actually multiple small flowers. So they're actually almost life size. The flower, each blossom, each individual sort of bronze piece is actual life's kind of life size of a camellia.
They're laid out on a
circular plaque. Mm-hmm. One of the things, the visual that he brings up is this idea of the tree. Of course, it's a round tree, and so when the blossoms would fall. In the tree being in a sort of a land of moss, green moss, and if it would rain and the blossoms would come down hard or heavy, then there'd be a ring of the blossoms around the tree, around mm-hmm. the trunk of the tree. And so he recreates that sort of ring of the camellia blossoms on the ground in this work, in the sculptural work.
That sounds so beautiful. It's really mossy gorgeous. Ground with a red circle on it.
Exactly, right? And we're going to be installing this right in front of one of the glass, some of the sliding glass doors in the pavilion gallery. So you'll be able to see the work of art and look past it through the glass into the garden space. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be, it's the garden itself is such an amazing setting for Tatehana's work. And that's what's so exciting about this.
Mm-hmm. He's been here, right? And he liked it.
He did love it. This was sort of penciled in before I got to the garden, and there was some hesitation with him about doing the exhibition. Mm-hmm. He came here with his team for a site visit this past April, and after spending just a short time here, realized what an amazing setting and what a treasure we have here in Portland at the Japanese mm-hmm. Garden, and immediately thought, yes, this is where I want to have my first solo show in North America, because it's really going to showcase his art so well.
And it was Christine Koukouris was the original curator.
Right, right. She was the one who brought this idea to the garden. Again, before I got to the garden, she is a curator and writer based in New York, but she's originally from Portland. She grew up in Portland, so she knew Portland and she knew the Japanese garden, and she got to know Tatehana in her writing and work in the fashion world in New York, and immediately just put the two together, thinking this would be the perfect place mm-hmm. for this man who creates artwork and is so connected to craft and nature, and so brought it to the attention of the garden, and that's how it all started.
So I think one of the most crafty things in Japan is got to be the samurai sword because it takes forever. You know, you have to be like 15 generations doing it before you get any good at it. So of course, he goes for the katana or whatever you call it.
Right, the big katana sword, exactly. Yeah.
What's he done with it?
Well, another one of my my favorite pieces in the show, too, is it's called the Void series. And that's a play on the production of the actual work itself. There's sort of this mystique, this poetic mystery of sword making and swords, samurai swords. You know, people collect swords in hundreds of years history in the development. And Japanese swords and blades are considered the finest in the world. And again, people who made swords generation after generation, this is a craft, right? And this is something that Tatehana really thought strongly of. He wants to find a way to create a market so that sword makers can continue and generations can continue to craft swords. And of course, you can't really hang out with swords anymore. Walking around with a large
sword. They don't have open carry with swords.
And so, looking for ways to make that longevity to that art form. And so he found a sword maker, a 15th generation sword maker in Nara, another ancient capital of Japan, Kawachi, Kunihiro. And he crafted swords for sculpture work that Tatehana designed. And they're called the Void series. And he encases the finished sword blades in acrylic. And he's doing this in a way to keep the sword for longevity, right, for future generations. So he's sort of encapsulating the sword in acrylic to keep it for future generations. It's this metaphor for keeping the art form alive. I was just in Japan, traveling, doing work for next year's exhibitions and to give a presentation in Kyoto. And I was able to, I timed it so, or I didn't time it on purpose, but it happened that I timed it for an opening of his new exhibition in Tokyo. So I got to go to the opening night and
Tatehana's
exhibit. Right. Okay. He just had an opening in Tokyo at his gallery. And I had the great fortune of actually meeting the sword maker. Kawachi was brought in from Nara to come to the opening. So I actually got to meet him, and he was just a delight to talk to. And he was very concerned about how we were going to install the work here at the garden and how the lighting was going to happen to show the sword blade just as it should be and to show the depth and the skill with which it's
So the blade has pattern on it, and he wants the lighting to hit it just right. But the swords are stuck in acrylic. It's like they're in amber, but clear. It's like they're trapped.
It's clear acrylic, right?
But he's hollowed out a shape of the scabbard. The sword holder.
Right.
There's a void in the shape of a sword holder.
Right. Hence the name Void. Exactly. So the blade is set in acrylic, and then around it though it's sort of set in the context. And that is created in the void of the acrylic. So in one piece, it has the horizontal blade laid out, and it's included in reverse or in the negative space. He's created the handle and the scabbard as well in a pattern version.
And this is that when you hollow it out, it goes kind of milky white or slightly cloudy.
Almost like frosted glass, if you will. Yeah. Exactly. And then another new piece that he's just created, it's a vertical blade that he's encased in flames in the acrylic. And that has all sorts of Buddhist connotations with Fudomyo, who is one of the gods of wisdom, the kings of wisdom in Buddhist esoteric Buddhism, and who is this fierce god who uses flames and blade to scare people into believing the Buddhist faith, and to also and then the flames are considered to purify the spirit and the soul as well. So it has many layers of meaning, this wonderful piece. Plus, it includes this amazing craft of the sword blade.
It does sound like one of the most exciting art shows we're going to have in Portland this year. This is Joseph Galliman on Art Focus. I've been talking to Laura Muller, art curator at the Portland Japanese Garden. The show is called Noritaka Tatehana, Refashioning Beauty, October the 5th through December the 1st. And thank you so much for coming in to KBOO again. You always give delightful interpretations and explanations of what's going on there. So we really, really appreciate it. If anyone wants to call 877-500-5266, you can be entered into a drawing to win 2 tickets to the garden. Thanks very much, Laura.
Thank you, Joseph. It's always fun to come. Thank you.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all. Whoa, 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 whoa.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food to our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in the Richmond District, serving family style every day from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. or later. Lunch was provided by Devil's Dill, located in the Buckman neighborhood at 1711 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Open daily from 5 p.m. to 3 a.m., Devil's Dill serves a variety of sandwiches, including vegan and gluten-free options. Dinner was provided by Cassidy's Restaurant and Bar, located downtown at 1331 Southwest Washington Street. Cassidy serves new American cuisine along with a selection of drinks daily from 4 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Así que vamos a retirar, deliremos por un ratito.